kids are going to be actually helping me preach the sermon today. As soon as they get in their places, we're going to be talking about the second piece of our story we started last week. We set the stage. Jesus was asked a very important question: what shall I do to inherit eternal life? The expert of the law said two things. You have to love God with all your heart, and you have to love your neighbors yourself, which led to the question, who's my neighbor? Isn't that the question that we all ask every day? Who should I be kind to? Who should I be generous to? Who should I care for? Who's my responsibility? What is my responsibility? And this is the story that Jesus shared with us. And our young folks are going to help me with this story today. Muggings were common on that 17-mile road between, named the Way of Blood, between Jerusalem and Jericho. It was a often-traveled road. It went plunged 3,300 feet from Jerusalem to Jericho. And in a day when all travel was hazardous, the Jericho Road was one that was especially so. So as Jesus is telling the story, he's talking to people about, have you ever been on the wrong side of town? Tell you a quick story. Several years ago, we were traveling to Michigan. This is back in the days before GPS and all those wonderful devices that we now have that tells us which way to go. And we were coming back from Michigan, and we wound up coming through Columbus, Ohio. We were following road signs because in those days that's all you had. And as we got into the middle of Columbus, Ohio, they were doing major road construction, and they had removed the signs from the interstate. I just kept driving. And all of a sudden, I found myself in this part of town that I really didn't want to be in. It was a little rough. And I've been in a few rough places in my life. And this was one of those that you locked the doors, rolled up the windows, and kept on boogieing down the road. So this is the description of the Jericho Road. It was not a place that you just hung out. And so Jesus tells us this story, and here's where our first character is making their way down to the front of the church, wherever they are. They are still lost on their journey. They're following the GPS, and they're trying to find the Jericho Road. They got lost. Patiently with no anxiety. Okay, here. And so down this desolate road comes this lone traveler that has most certainly a Jew. He has been set upon by a band of robbers, as you can see, and he's not only been robbed, but he has been badly beaten and bruised, and so he falls down to the ground. Bleeding and dying and moaning and sobbing and crying for help. And sometime later down the road comes a priest, a preacher, who's all dressed up in his Sunday go-to-meeting outfit because he's just on his way home from church, and he had been serving as the priest in the temple, and he's just come back from having a great time worshiping God, and he sees this poor wretched creature lying in blood and mud, and he says, what? He says, I'm not getting my Sunday go to meeting clothes dirty with that guy who's got all this. So he passes on by him and goes on his way. A there's a third character that comes along a little bit after that, and this is the worship leader in the temple called a Levite, and she has just finished up her duties, and she is so happy that she was able to lead the congregation in high praise and worship, and everybody said, what an awesome worship we had today, and she passes by this poor, hurting person and says, I can't mess up my choir robe. The dry cleaning bills are too high. The next person that happened along the way was a person that nobody, especially as a Jew, liked. Imagine if you could, and I'm being politically incorrect right now, I totally admit to that, because I'm an old guy that loves Westerns. So imagine if you were in Dodge City, or you were out in the desert outside of Dodge City, and you had been kind of set upon by the Indians, and they kind of left you half dead, but there was Indian that came along and saw you in your distress and decided that they were going to get involved. And so down the road came a Samaritan. And they come to this poor, hurting, bleeding, dying, pitiful, crying person. And they got involved and they picked them up. We couldn't get a donkey in the church today, so we had to kind of play a little bit. But they put him on their own donkey and took him down the road to an inn. We just kind of had to ad-lib some of this because y'all wouldn't want to see us act this whole thing out. So what he did was he took his robes and he tore strips off of his own garments and he bound up this person that was bleeding and dying and broken, put him on his own a vehicle of transportation, carried him off to a very fine motel and said to the motel owner, give him the best room, provide everything that he needs, here's some money to pay for it, and I will be passing by this way again, and when I come again, if I owe you anything more for his care, I will take care of it. That's the story that Jesus is telling. And he's telling that story to respond to this man who says, tell me who is my neighbor. Let me talk about that for a little bit. The priest who is leaving Jerusalem more than likely lived in Jericho. A lot of the priests in that day did. He has just returned from engaging in worship. Now, I don't want us to think that these two men were bad people. Sometimes when we hear the story of the Good Samaritan, we get the impression that the priest and the Levite were bad, uncaring, unfeeling people. That's not true. Jesus was not implying that. What he was saying is, they had some restraints. You got to understand a little history to really understand this story. This priest comes down and he finds a fellow Jew that is in need. He finds another human being that is lying in a pool of blood, possibly dying. And he chooses not to get involved, not because he's uncaring, but because he's part of a religious system that is going to really put some restrictions on his ability to get involved. So you got to know a little bit of Old Testament law here. So the Old Testament law said that when a priest had been cleansed and they had to go through this incredible process in order to present themselves in the temple and before God, as a matter of fact, they had to bathe between 3 to 6 times, depending on which theologian that you listen to. So can you imagine you've got to take 3 baths before you come to church? Okay? They had to put on new clothes. underwear all the way through, clothes that had, so every time they got ready to serve as the priest, they had to go shopping at Walmart and get a new set of underwear. It was an elaborate process for them to be able to present themselves clean and holy. So here's this priest. He's on his way back from the temple, and the Mosaic law said, if you touch a dead body, you are unclean. Now, as far as this man can determine, this guy's either dead or dying, and he's not ignoring him because he's not caring. He's not touching him because he doesn't want to go through the process of making himself clean again. Are y'all hearing? It's not the uncaring, it's the inconvenience that he's having a problem with. Keep that in mind as we talk about our application. This priest has been away from home. He's on his way back home. If he touches this dead, dying person, he has to make the trip back to Jerusalem to get cleansed again. It was expensive. It was costly. It was time consuming. It was inconvenient. I put this in my notes. Needy people show up at inconvenient times. Have you ever noticed that? Have you ever been sitting at your home and you're enjoying, I'll just talk about it as a pastor, as a preacher, okay? Years ago, y'all know I'm getting old, but anyway. Years ago, when they first came out with microwave ovens, I won't ask how many people in this room remember when they first came out. We won't go that with that show of hands. But we were pastoring a church, and the parsonage was right across the street from the church. And I was so glad when Sherry and I scraped up enough money to buy a microwave oven because I could start having hot foods. Because what would happen invariably, I used to say they got a radar camera or something on the wall, because every time she would prepare supper, we would sit down and get ready to eat supper, the phone would ring and somebody would need the pastor. I also found out as a pastor over the years that when I am tired and worn out and I'm saying, man, I'm going to go get to bed early tonight and I'm going to get me a good night's rest, that's the night when people have problems. This priest understood that needy people show up at inconvenient times and they kind of pull us outside of our comfort zone. When we were down in a little town called Sandville, we started working with a lot of needy people. People that came out of the alcohol culture and the drug culture and the witchcraft and Satan worship cultures. And you know what? I don't think those people slept. Because at about 2 o'clock in the morning, and they had a community of friends. And so I was actually working a full-time job and pastoring a church at that time. And so at 2 o'clock in the morning, the doorbell on the parsonage goes ding, 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 because they wouldn't take their finger off the button. I'd like to tell you all that I got up happy to serve. I'd like to tell you all that I got up glad that they brought another friend with a need to my house at 2 o'clock in the morning. I'd like to tell you all that I got my head off the pillow and jumped up with joy and say, hallelujah, Jesus, I get to serve you again. If I told you that, I'd be lying. What would happen was the doorbell would ring and I would look over, both Sherry and I would wake up and I'd look over at Sherry and I said, oh God, here we go again. And God brought all kind of people into my life at that time. let me tell you a little bit about my story so it will have a little bit more impact. As growing up as a child, genetically speaking, I was telling someone earlier today, genetically speaking, I'm supposed to be an alcoholic. Because genetically speaking, on both sides of my family, on my mama's side and on my daddy's side, we had a lot of alcoholics. I had uncles that actually died from one form or the other of alcoholism. So growing up as a young person, I hated alcohol. And the reason I hated it was you know, not necessarily a spiritual thing. I just hated what it was doing to people. So I didn't like alcoholics. God has this great sense of humor. Because sometimes God will bring people into your life that you don't like their lifestyle. You don't like who they are. They kind of rub you the wrong way. They push your buttons. And so I want you to know when that doorbell would ring at 2 o'clock in the morning and here comes one of these new believers who's bringing his buddy that is drunk as a skunk. I don't know if y'all use that terminology in Roanoke. That's what we say down in Franklin County. Okay? And the smell of the alcohol that was coming out of his pores, and I'm holding this weeping, broken, crying, messed up drunk in my arms, trying not to throw up. That's inconvenience. And then I would see God do an awesome, incredible thing of taking that person whose life was all messed up because they were a person that was in need. And I remember standing there several times thinking to myself, God, if somebody comes by in the morning before I get a chance to get in the shower, they're going to think I've been out bar hopping. Because you're putting yourself on the line. When you minister to needy people, you get dirty with them. When you minister to hurting people, you get broken with them. When you take on some of their needs. This is the call that God has given to us as a body of believers, that we step out of our comfort zone. We can't be like the priest and say, I'm too clean, I'm too holy, I'm too righteous, I'm too spiritual. No. If we're really holy and righteous and spiritual, then we have the courage to take on those pieces of society that are broken and hurting, and we don't leave them lying there in their despair and in their brokenness, but we get engaged and we get involved with them. It's not easy. Stretches us out, and I can remember several of those occasions holding that person in my arm, and I was having to pray for me as much as I was praying for them, because I was having to pray, God, would you give me the love for this person that I can't stand? I hope that doesn't offend you. I'm just being open and transparent with you all this morning. I'm like what this rich young ruler, this expert in the law, should have said to Jesus. Jesus, I'm trying to love God with all my heart, and I'm trying to love my neighbors like you love me, but I'm having a hard time doing both of those because there's too much of John still in me. Let me quickly move on. The Levite comes down next, and he didn't serve at the altar, but he was very important, and again, his motives were not given, so the question has to be asked, why didn't the Levite get involved? Well, can you imagine? Do you remember where they were? Did we forget in this story where this took place? It was not in a safe part of town. It was on the road of blood. It was a very insecure place. And perhaps the Levite might have thought, if I get involved with this guy, while I'm involved with him, I'm going to become like him. Because the same people that took him out is probably going to take me out too. So the second piece that I think we ought to learn from this is quite often we don't get involved with hurting, needing, broken people because we're afraid. There's a risk. Somebody said, man, if I help people, I might get sued and lose everything I got. True. You might. I might lose my reputation. You might. I might lose my standing in the community. You might. I might have him people talk about me. You might. I may have to give up some of my freedoms. You might. There's a fear factor in getting involved with hurting people. I remember one time folks saying to me, "John, we don't want those kind of people come to our church because we're afraid they're going to influence our kids." I said, "I trust our kids more than you do, because I trust the Jesus inside of our kids, because the word says greater is he that's in you than he that's in the world." We shouldn't make the mistake that these people are bad. They're just busy. Let me quickly move on. Jesus is telling this story. I'm absolutely sure that the audience got caught up in the story. I won't ask you all to raise your hands, but I know this for a fact. People love it when the preacher messes up and everybody finds out. We get put on pedestals. We get elevated to impossible levels, and everybody's waiting for us to trip and to stumble and say, "Oh, I thought you was a preacher." I remember one time I was doing a job for someone, and I gave them a bill, and they didn't want to pay the bill, and so I asked them about it, and they said, "I thought you was a preacher. Why are you bugging me about paying my bill?" I said, "Well, it's not so much that I want you to pay your bill, but the bank that I owe insists that I give them money, and I need yours so that, you know, because I don't have any of my own." It's amazing how we... So the audience of Jesus were the same. They loved it that the pastor and the worship leader was the bad guys in the story, and they already have guessed who the hero is going to be, because it's always going to be an ordinary person like me. I'm going to be the hero. And then Jesus turns the tales on these people, and he says to them, "I want to tell you about a good Samaritan." Now, we put that in the Bible. It's there in the headings of a lot of Bibles. But I will tell you, that is as much of a paradox as you could imagine. For all the group that's been here for the last two Saturdays, y'all know what I'm getting ready to say. I'm digging myself a hole. Taught him a couple times, I think yesterday and the Saturday before that. I not only dug myself a hole, I had the shovel of dirt hanging right over, getting ready to fill it back in. That's what I'm getting ready to do now. So as we think about our climate today, our world today, when Jesus is telling the story to the Jews about a good Samaritan, it would be like a Democratic caucus talking about a good Republican, or a Republican caucus talking about a good Democrat. Let that settle in for a moment. The animosity between the Jews and the Jews believed that Samaritans defiled the temple, distorted the Torah, and degraded divine worship. And for their part, the Samaritans returned that hostility in the same measure. It was an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. They had nothing in common with each other. So Jesus says, there was a Samaritan that passed by the way. And Jesus gives us the key. Here's the key to getting involved with hurting, needy people. Jesus says, when the Samaritan saw the man in need, he had compassion on him. That's the key. That's the key. In those days when we were there in that little church in Henry County, that God was moving among the hurting and the broken, one Sunday afternoon, somewhere around the middle of January in a very cold winter, one of my deacons drove to the church parking, knocked on the door. I went to open the door, and he was standing there with another man. This man's name was Dudley. Dudley had been one of the boys that had been sent off to Vietnam during the Vietnam conflict. Dudley had been engaged and involved in a lot of battles. He had seen many of his fellow soldiers die in his presence. He'd watched whole companies being blown to smithereens. He had been there in that whole time, and Dudley's way of coping with those memories and coping with that trauma, coping with that horror, was he turned to alcohol. And Dudley said to me very clearly, he said, "John," later on, as we worked through him, and I'll back up and tell you the story in a second, but as God began to transform Dudley's life, and we started having some conversations, I said to Dudley, "Dudley, why this?" And he said, "John," he said, "when I close my eyes, when I try to sleep," he said, "I'm seeing the images of all of that pain and suffering and horror, and the only way that I can find relief is I literally drink myself into oblivion so I don't have to think." By the time Dudley came along to our church, Dudley had been literally abandoned by his family, largely because Dudley had created so many problems with his parents, problems with his wife. He had basically so damaged his relationships with the family. Nobody wanted anything to do with Dudley. But what had happened was, one of my deacons happened to be driving by this place, and Dudley was on the side of the road. Found out that in the middle of January, Dudley had been sleeping in an abandoned car. And my deacon said, "I picked him up. I don't know what to do with him." We brought Dudley into our home, set him up a bed in the basement, and worked with Dudley. And Dudley started getting his life together. And after about a month or so, he was able to go back to work, and look, things were looking good. And all of a sudden, one day, Dudley dropped out of the picture, and we didn't see him any longer. We didn't know where he was, and we couldn't find him. And a few days later, that same deacon showed up, and here's Dudley. Except now Dudley's in worse shape than he's ever been in his life. You got to understand, this is back in the early 80s. He brought Dudley to us, and I knew that we had to get Dudley some help, some medical help at that moment. We had a church van. Had the name of the church printed down the side of the van. Y'all go, this is going to be an important piece. I had a little assistant youth pastor at the time. This kid had grown up in a very secure environment. He had never been in rough places and rough. He didn't know anything about the rough side of life. And he happened to be at the church. And I said to him, his name is Mike. I said, "Mike, you need to go with me, son." Now he was young enough that he was about 20 years old. I was 25, so he was okay with being obedient to his elder. He said, "What are we going to do, Pastor John?" I said, "Well, we're going to take Dudley, and we're going to put him in the church van, and we're going to drive him from Henry County to the VA in Salem, because Dudley has got to have some help." Y'all remember my experience growing up as a child with alcoholics and all, so I knew a little bit about alcoholism. I had an uncle that died with DTs. I had another one that died from cirrhosis. So I knew a little bit about the medical thing. So we put Dudley in the van, and we start out from this little community of Samuel, which is between Firestone Park and Bassett. We drove about 5 miles down the road, and I just happened to look behind me because Dudley was sitting in the seat, and I thought, this man's going to die before I get into VA. What am I going to do? I pulled into the convenience store in the church van at Bassett Forks. I got out of the church van and walked into the convenience store at Bassett Forks and bought a six-pack of beer. Put it back in the van. Turned to Dudley and said, Dudley, start drinking. He looked at me, his eyes got that big because he never expected a preacher to say that. Got him to the VA, took him into the emergency room, and the doctor in the VA said to me, this man is alive because you kept him alive till we could get him here and work on him. Sometimes you got to get yourself way out of the comfort zone to do what God's calling you to do. And this little youth pastor of mine, he's looking at me like, Pastor, what's the deacons going to say when they find out about this? I don't know. I may be looking for a job. Dudley went to VA. They got him dried out. Dudley came back to church. Dudley went back home. He and his wife fixed their relationship. And several years ago, I ran into Dudley, and Dudley said, John, you won't believe what I'm doing now. What you doing, Dudley? My wife and I are in church. We're involved. We're doing ministries in church. Why? Because sometimes you got to be willing to take the risk of the Samaritan and get involved with somebody that's got a messed up life. And when you do that, God does incredible things. Let's get to the point of the story before we move into communion today. Because communion today is about us seeing Jesus and all that he's given for us. Stay with me just a few moments. The Lord answers several questions in this story. Who's my neighbor? Now the Jews want to say, my fellow Jew, my fellow worshiper, the fellow member of my club, the people in my social group, the people that I do all these things with. But Jesus says, my neighbor is the person that I see who has a need, whose need I can meet. It misrepresents the Lord to suggest that he's saying that theological and religious things don't matter. They do. Our need isn't to define who our neighbor is. Our need is to care for those that have needs. The second thing is more important. Jesus asked a question. And it's very important that we read the question with the correct words. Jesus does not say to the expert in the law, so who was the neighbor? What Jesus said, the question was, which one of these became? That's the difference. Not who was the neighbor, but who became. You see, for Dudley, I wasn't his neighbor. Dudley lived a lifestyle that wasn't my kind of lifestyle. Dudley was involved and engaged in the bars and the drinking. That wasn't what I was doing. I was engaged in being a pastor and being a church leader. We were living two different, totally different kinds of lives. But you see, when the need came into the room, it wasn't that I became like Dudley. And this is the thing that we got to understand in the church. God's not calling us to become like people that we're ministering to. God is calling us to become neighbors to those people and give them the help from a position of strength spiritually. Because you can't get down in the ditch and lift somebody out. You got to be out of the ditch and reach down and pull them out. the last question that he asked. Am I concerned about calculating the limits of love, or am I concerned about caring for hurting people? Will y'all indulge me to tell one quick story? I'm asking permission. I'm not taking that for granted. There was this young man that, as he grew up to be a teenager, had an older brother. This older brother, it was a very interesting relationship, because this older brother just absolutely loved his younger brother. And so for his graduation, the older brother bought his younger brother a very nice car. Gave it to him as a gift. Bob is the guy's name, and Bob had his car downtown, and it was all shined and beautiful, and his plans was that he was going to, you know, call, you know, the girls, and he was going, this car was going to be the chick magnet. That was his plans. And while he's down on the street with that beautiful car that he wants, it's there, and his reason is to impress all the ladies. There's a little boy that comes along, and he begins to look at that car, and he's saying, I wish I had a car like this. And Bob tells him this story. Well, my brother gave this to me for graduation. And this little boy said, wow, what an amazing thing. And Bob is saying, well, I know he's just doing this because he wants to ride in this car, so I'm going to be kind, and I'm going to give this little boy a ride in my car. So he says to the little boy, would you like to go for a ride? Oh, yeah, I'd love to go for a ride. They get in the car, and the little boy says to Bob, Bob, can you go by this street and stop at this house? And Bob is thinking, yeah, he wants to go by and kind of brag to his friends or brag to his family. Look, I got to ride in this incredible chick magnet. And they pull up to the house. The little boy says to Bob, wait a minute, I'll be right back. Little boy runs into the house, and he comes back a little bit later, and he's carrying his younger brother, who's crippled. And Bob is thinking, well, he just wants to show him my car. And then Bob says, and this is a true story, Bob tells the story. Bob says the words that came out of his mouth for me. This is what this young boy said. When I grow up, I want to be a brother like that so I can buy my brother a car. That's the parable of the Good Samaritan. That we forget our interests, our preferences, what's good for us, and we begin to say, God, would you let me grow up and be a child of God that considers the needs of others first. Isn't that what we celebrate in communion? That Jesus said to his Father, when I grow up, I want to be a friend to these humans that we created. Let me be the sacrifice. Our children are going to help us serve communion today. As you receive the elements of the communion, I want you to think about the Good Samaritan. His real name is Jesus. He's the only one that comes to us in need, loves us where we are, picks us up, takes us to the place of blessing, and then he says something powerful to the church, because we're the innkeepers. He said, you care for those hurting, broken people that I'm going to bring to you, and when I come again, what it costs you to care for them, I'll pay the bill.